58104's fastest growing podcast. It's the legend. And the loudmouth. It's Miller time, ladies and gentlemen. Anywhere you are, by whatever method you are listening, we thank you for choosing this podcast. Sorry, listening and socially distancing. And while the loudmouth and I are not, or the legend and I are not technically socially distancing, the legend is on location tonight, ladies and gentlemen, live from Lakes Country. Legend, how are we doing tonight?
I'm good.
Are you enjoying the scenic views of the lake as you are on spring break today?
You mean of walking out and seeing ice?
Yeah that. Well, that's what I meant. Okay. Well, good. Well, it's good to see you. The show, of course, however, takes no days off That is what we do here on the show. And again, Grant, this season never ceases to amaze because guess what, ladies and gentlemen?
It's Miller time.
Yeah. So there we go. It's Miller time. Cam Miller comes out, leads the Vys into victory. We'll talk about that tonight. We'll go over the FCS recap of the weekend. We will start talking about some bracketology and dive in on a very high-level view. We'll have more of the detailed version of our bracket show when we do this on Thursday. But overall, we'll talk, you know, just general brackets and some surprises, some teams I think might be a little overrated, underrated. We'll go into that. We'll briefly touch on the loss of a great middleweight boxing champion, Marvin Hagler, one of my all-time favorites. And so we've got a busy show ahead of us tonight. But let's start out with talking about the now number four ranked team in the country. It was a little bit of a tale of two halves, wasn't it, Grant? The Bison win it 21-13 over Illinois State, and not exactly a game without drama. Your general impressions as we sat there and watched amongst the crowd of 6,000 plus on Saturday at the fabulous Fargo Dome?
Initial reaction was that I think NDSC found themselves a quarterback, and his name isn't Zeb Nolan. I think Cam played about as well as you could for a freshman that's not named Trey Lance, but he did pretty well.
I thought the interesting thing about Miller's game in particular, and going back and rewatching the game, that touchdown run that he had, that's a next-level play for a quarterback to make. And he actually had, if you look at the tape again, it really looks like he has the tight end on the mesh route in the left corner of the end zone. But as he said, he didn't trust his stuff.
No, he said he trusted his ability with his legs to get it in.
Well, so do I. And I thought, honestly, not to make this all about Cam Miller, but I think we have to some extent. Now, Matt Entz today gave the exact answer that I thought he would in his press conference, saying that he hasn't decided on a starter for this week. You think that's bullshit?
Absolutely.
Okay. Would you be shocked if Cam Miller isn't the starter on Saturday?
Then you must trust Zeb, then. That'd be my opinion.
I don't.
I don't trust him.
I don't at all.
No. I trust Cam right now because he can move. His offense team made for a guy who can move, and Zeb isn't the answer right now.
So
he's made it pretty clear.
Miller threw actually probably the two best balls of the day that I saw. There was that one hanger on the sideline. I think that was where he got it into. Was that Watson that caught that one?
Yes.
Yeah, and then he had the other one on the other side that was equally nice. I don't underestimate his ability to throw the football. The only thing we haven't seen him do yet is turn it loose deep. And we'll get more into this when we talk UND in more detail later in the week, but I think that's where you can beat UND is on the deep ball, because I don't think they've got an athlete, theoretically speaking, that should be able to stay with Christian Watson on the outside. And they definitely had the first ball that Zeb had that got picked off would have been a touchdown if Zeb had about a second more protection, because he was wide open behind the defender, and all it needed to do was get there. The second ball was underthrown, and that should have been a touchdown. So if you factor the two really what should have been gimme touchdowns there with a competent pass protection scheme and getting rid of the ball, and the fact that the Bison got stopped on fourth and goal at the one, really should have made this game more of a rout than it was, in my opinion.
Yeah, it should have been more crisp, I would say, on the offensive side of the ball, but that this Bison offense is different. It's not as fluent as it usually is, but that Bison defense, for all that it was thrown at in that game, they still bowed up to the challenge. They blocked an extra point, so they did about as well as they could on that side of the ball.
Can't underestimate how big that blocked extra point was that Spencer got. In fact, it they made it easy for him, not that it wasn't a great play, but the kick was almost right into the offensive lineman's back. It was that low. And Wagey didn't have to do a lot to get it, but the point is, and Matt Entz made a good point of this in the press conference, it's giving a shit, not his words, mine, that on the extra point, you don't just go in there and go through the motions and try to just stick your hand up in the air. You go full tilt out to block it.
And
that's the key part of the game, I think, of the Bison then can breathe a sigh of relief and then go on that 9-minute march, or whatever it was, 8:47 or whatever on the clock. And that, to me, is such a huge part of why they won this game, is because then they had that 8-point cushion to work with, and then you know your defense knows that the worst they're going to do is walk off the field tied on that last drive. And that wasn't, Illinois State really didn't mount a credible threat to get to the end zone at any point there either. So I think the Bison defense was right on point for most of that game.
Right, but with a block kick under any circumstances, it's a big momentum shift. Because you think an extra point is just to lay up, it's 1 point, who cares? But if you actually gave a shit on that play, you would block a lot more extra points than you think you would. But I think once you got into that fourth quarter, when you knew that the Bison were going to drive, because they always do in the fourth quarter, if they're up by a point or they need something, they went that 9-minute chop away at the clock, and they did what they needed to do and scored. So they did it as much as they could in that fourth quarter to win.
And I haven't gone through, and I will do this before the UND game, but I need to go through and see on first down how many times the Bison wind up second and 8, second and 9, second and 10, second and worse, as I call it. I really need to see that. And I haven't charted it all out yet. I've gotten through the Youngstown game, which was probably their best one in terms of getting first down ability. But, man, it's just so many second and 9, second and 10s. If Miller is in the game and he can bring that element of the quarterback run in, and maybe you do that on first down a little bit, all of a sudden you're talking about second and 6, second and 5, second and manageable, and then you can take it down to third and manageable. But I can't tell you, just in the list of plays that I looked at from all the first downs, I swear to God every one of them is a Kobe Johnson 2-yard run.
Well, it's that slow counter, too, that I hate. When Zeb's in the game, the first down play is the slow-developing counter to the left, which I can't stand. And it annoys me, the fact that we can't change what we do best, because the Bison are not a tendency-breaker team, usually, on offense. It's pound the ball and then with a little bit of play action. With Cam, run the boots. If it's the bread-and-butter boot play of the Bison like to run. The tight end's out there, take it. We can get 5 yards out of that. Just be aggressive on offense.
Yeah, and I'll take second and 5, second and 4, whatever, if that needs to happen like that. Because I don't think the Bison are they're just not equipped to go into second and long. And they're never a team that would be that way anyway.
No.
But if you look at, again, I'm just going to do this, so bear with me here as I do this. But I look at the first half numbers here. I'm looking at NDSU's first down plays, all right? First down and 10 in the opening drive, it's Kobe up the middle for 3, okay? Next drive. They get a first down on a Cam Miller pass we talked about. But then the next first down, it's Ganella for two. The next first down, it's Ganella for one. The next first down, it's Ganella for four. Okay? And then, of course, then you get the... It's Ganella for one. It's Kobe for four. It's Bussy for six. That's the best play I saw in the whole thing. And then, of course, they had the big play to Watson, which was on first down. That was the 42-yard catch that they had. And so, yeah, that's your money drive.
Right.
But so many of these plays are just, ugh. And then here I go again looking at that. Bussy loses three on a first down, and they punt on that drive. And then you have, let's see here, I'm getting to the third quarter. Bison start out, Kobe loses four on a first down run. First and 10, Cam Miller, no gain. First and 10, Kobe for two. Next drive, first and 10, Bussy up the middle, loses one. Next drive, Miller goes up the middle for 13. And then they have Bussy for no gain. I mean, it's just every time I look at, and that's just the first three quarters, and I'll look at the fourth here. But you get my drift here. The only drive that they consistently got, if you look at their first down on the final drive, and that's why I'm getting to this, Raja Nelson got a carry, which was kind of interesting. He got five. Ganella goes for 25, the next first down. Bussy for eight. And then they had Ganella for no gain. Ganella for two. Ganella for one. And it's on those first down plays, man, you just don't get a lot. And they've got to get out of those situations where that happens. So illustrating my point, and I'm going to look at the season stats on this, and this is going to become more critical against UND, you've got to get into second and manageable right off the bat.
You got to stay on the field right where anything else.
I know I hate the phrase on schedule, but the Bison really need to stay on schedule.
The Bison, it's a very tailor-made for the second and shorts, and you know, so your second and fives, your second and sixes. You can run the run off. You can do the zone read. You can throw the pass off of it. There's a lot of things you can do in a second and manageable situation, but for the Bison, do something more than the first down run, because at some point, Illinois State was going to start to tailor their defense around the first down run. I mean, you can't block Ridgeway every single drive on first down. Maybe run to the outside a little bit more. It's the inside run on first down that's so annoying, because it's like, you know what? Ridgeway's pretty good. You're not going to get that. You got to go around the edges. And if Missouri State you did that, why would it change for Illinois State?
Boy, Ridgeway's a dude. I mean, that guy will be playing on Sunday, and he absolutely is a mountain in there. Now, he gets a little fatigued, but man alive, he is just a load to move. And Gray Zabel had to come in and play center during the game. And man, that's asking a lot of an 18-year-old kid to move a dude that size and with that kind of skill level. And the other thing that Illinois State just, you know, imagine if they could throw a forward pass with any consistency.
It'd be really good if they could throw a forward pass.
I understand Brock Speck has a big stiffy for guys that are, you know, all about the dual threat quarterback thing and everything. But, man, Bryce Jefferson in that game was somewhere, but I mean, 9 of 26. And honestly, it won for 124 yards, and of course, 45 of it came on one play that happened to get loose. But, my God, he's horrible.
Yeah.
And he, I know his running ability, and I know he ran for, you know, 29 yards and whatever it was, and he makes you think about defending somebody else. But, I don't see how Illinois State is going to get a lot better with him at the helm. I don't think he adds a lot to that team. Nigel White was pretty good. He had a nice game, and once NDSU started closing off those cutback lanes, because he was cutting out, and they would get to the outside and get some decent gains.
Right.
But I thought after they started to clamp down on that a little bit more, the defense kind of got things under control. They also threw in Jackson Waring, the other freshman quarterback. They threw him for a series. I'm not sure that was planned, but he came in and ran a little bit ineffectively. But, man, the Illinois State offense, that's, you know, 8 quarters of football they've played in the Dome, and they've scored, you know, 16 points. That's not going to get it done. And now their season's over.
Yeah, it's over. And you went to their offense. They haven't had a real great quarterback in 7 years, and they had Trey Roberson. I mean, honestly, Trey Roberson was a dynamic talent from the two trench from Indiana. He was really good for a couple of seasons. But it's just, they can't seem to find a quarterback to fit with a really good running back they've had. Like, they had James Robinson for a couple seasons, and he was amazing. But they can always have one or the other. They can't always find that great quarterback to go with that great running game or great receiver.
And you mentioned Roberson. Let's not forget that year that they
he took, was a dude.
Was Marshawn Coppridge, who was unbelievable. So he and Roberson were basically the dynamic duo, and it almost worked.
Yeah.
That you're one drive away from running off there with a national championship, and I get the philosophy, but so far you're right. He's kind of got one or the other, and I don't see either of the two mainstay backs that they have there being the guy right now to get him out of trouble. So
another plan for Pride,
right? So. Yeah, and I wonder. This is what's kind of unfair about this season. I don't know if any of the teams that they've got to play yet. What incentive do they really have to win these games? I mean, they're going to beat Western Illinois, I would think.
It's a real problem, normal.
But then they got to go play South Dakota State, and I just got a hunch that a 1-3 Illinois State team isn't going to be real motivated to beat South Dakota State. And then they get Southern Illinois, and you know what? Maybe that'll work. This is the old, if you're already out of it, maybe you play like you got nothing to lose, and maybe we're going to have to hope for that for the Redbirds, as they can maybe help the Bison out and knock a few of these teams off. But I look at it as now with their season over, that's another quote-unquote ranked opponent the Bison have beaten, which is great. But if you look at it, the score shouldn't be a surprise. If you look at the Sagarin ratings, Sagarin said the Bison would be a 9-point favorite. Well, they won by 8. Not exactly a big surprise there.
Nope.
So, I guess I understand it could have been a lot worse, but the Bison just aren't equipped, it seems, this year to take advantage of that.
Well, the Bison, at some point, at this point, you really need to show, do you really need to hide anything else? You need to keep something else for later, because right now, I mean, you're only averaging 24 points a game. It's not like you can really hide anything anymore. You gotta go guns a-blazing, because they are not as good as they used to be as an offense. And maybe, maybe scoring 40 on UND is what the Bison need to really get going, because they're going to need more than 25 points to beat UND.
Do you share my opinion that it is better that this quarterback issue happened now rather than in the UND game?
Yes.
Okay. Because I'm totally on board saying that I think the Bison have at least now given themselves a chance, a better chance than I would have thought earlier to win this game. Now, if you look at where the Sagarin rankings come in, the Bison are going to be, should theoretically be 4 or 5 point favorites. But I have the feeling the media narrative is already that UND is a pretty good favorite going into this game. And I'm not sure I totally agree with that.
I'm just happy, going back to the quarterback thing, I'm just happy Ents had the balls to pull Zeb in the middle of the game. Because that's for a second year coach, that takes pretty big stones to pull your transfer from a Big 12 school quarterback and say, I want to throw my freshman and see how he does. But
right.
But I mean, the media and the McFeelys and then the Colpacks and the Izzos of the world is going to be, UND is going to win this game. And all I'm saying for UND is they haven't won a damn thing in 2 decades, and so now they're coming out of the woodwork saying we're going to win. Well, I'm not on UND until they can beat the Bison. You beat the Jacks, that's fantastic, but you got to beat NDSU before I can jump on the bandwagon and say, yes, they can win the national championship.
For everybody telling me UND's defense is better, they're seventh in the they're seventh in the conference in defense. So don't give me that line that they're this wonderful revamped defensive crew over there. All right,
it's a small defense.
I don't buy it. Scoring defense-wise, yeah, they're third in the conference. But let's just look at teams being able to move the ball on them. And again, more to break down on all this later on when we get into it. But Yes, I know they have the number one scoring offense in the Valley, and yes, they're the number one rushing team, but only by 7 yards a game over NDSU.
Right.
And they also have the top rush defense. But it will be interesting to see. North Dakota's pass defense, dead last in the conference. All right. Now, you can argue that's a byproduct of, you know, being teams been behind and half had to throw. I get some of that. But their pass defensive efficiency is in the bottom part of the league. And let's also not forget that special teams-wise, they've had basically nothing happen in the punt return game. The Bison, of course, we should address that quickly because I thought that play by Jaden Price was as big a, play in the game. Had to get that one in. Jaden Price, man, I tell you what. I think without that play, that there might have been a real lull there in the game where the Bison wouldn't be able to get on the board. But, well, he took care of that right away, and that seemed to just really spark the team.
Yeah, there were literally a couple of lulls in this game. I mean, if Zeb plays the whole game, the Bison lose. But that play by Jaden Price really set the tone that maybe they do still a little bit of special teams magic left in them. But it does amaze me how special teams plays can really swing momentums of games. Because it's like, okay, the Bison get the ball. They might get a field goal out of this drive. They're trying to feel it out. But no, you 85 yards, that really sets the tone that, you know what, we're in this game. We're here to win it. I don't know about you, but we're in it to win it.
Right. Let's go Grant, around the rest of the Valley. And the two big games of the weekend. One, not really a surprise. The other, very much so. We'll start with the biggest game that was outside of Fargo, and that's UNI going to Southern Illinois. And this was the big surprise because UNI goes in and has Southern Illinois in Carbondale. They've got them dead to rights beat. And Matt Cook, the preseason all-conference kicker in the Valley,
shouldn't miss, right?
Absolutely wrecks the game for UNI by not...
Shankopotamus.
He goes all Shankopotamus on a 30-yarder at the final buzzer to lose it. Not only that, though, he'd missed a field goal earlier in the game, an even shorter one. I believe it was 24 yards. And UNI, with that really good defense, and can't generate enough offense, and lose a game that they really should have all rights had. And Southern Illinois escapes with a one-point victory. But today we find out that it looks like Nick Baker will be out now. Nick Baker, the touchdown maker, will be out. So we're going to go back to my boy Stone Labanowitz. Going to be running the show, and I suspect we'll see a little more of J-Dub Jr., Javon Williams. Probably running some more Wildcat, but Southern are going to start to run out of quarterbacks, and that could be impactful down the stretch here if they have to go in. And next week, it doesn't get any easier because in the land of Brookings, South Dakota State needed a late field goal to escape Youngstown 19-17. I think the Bison caught Youngstown maybe at the right time to start out the year because I tell you what, Youngstown's come within probably a quarter and a half of beating both SIU and South Dakota State. Your thoughts on those two games?
Yeah, I think Youngstown State, when the Bison caught them, they didn't know what they were going to do. They passed for a quarter, they ran for a quarter, they treated like a scrimmage. But Southern Illinois might be the luckiest team I've ever seen play football. I mean, honestly, this lucky thing's going their way constantly. I'm just like, well, when it's your year, it's your kind of year, and someone's getting all their breaks right now. But if SIU can beat South Dakota State, that'll set the tone that they're here to win the conference. They're here to make the playoffs. They're here to win the entire conference. So
UNI was a 4-point favorite in Vegas. They were 6 points on the Sagarin, and of course wound up losing. South Dakota State was a 19-point favorite in Vegas in that game with 17 points on the Sagarin. And so, of course, again, just proof further of what this really weird year of football is like. The rest of the activity around the Valley, Missouri State, after absolutely going out and shitting the bed against the Bison the previous week, 25-0 they lose, comes back and knocks off South Dakota, who was ranked, 27-24. So Bobby Petrino gets his first win in the Valley. Bad loss for USD, who I thought was going to be, well, I didn't think they were going to be bad enough to lose to Missouri State. That one really surprised me, but, you know, South Dakota's at the top of the middle tier, and Missouri State's probably at the top of the bottom tier. I guess it doesn't stun me, but I guess I didn't expect the Jacks, who were 10.5-point favorites, to lose.
The Yotes, you mean?
Yeah, I'm sorry. Did I say South Dakota State? Yeah, I meant
you said Jacks.
I'm sorry. I meant the Yotes.
Yeah, but, I mean, when you're not as pass-happy as South Dakota is, you know you got a good running back there with Kai Henry. I mean, that pick six, though, really, really messed with South Dakota. But Missouri State, they ran a kickback for a touchdown, and they had a pick six in that game.
Right, right.
They did the above and beyond plays to win games. If you get the pick six and the kickoff return, you should be able to win most of your games. And they were able to find a way to get those two and then halt South Dakota's last-minute rally to try to get back in the game. But
yep.
Going from, you know, losing 25 donut to winning the game on the road at the Dakota Dome, that's a pretty impressive win for Petrino.
Yeah, and really, like you said, it was the way that they won that game was pretty unbelievable with Braswell, who took a 100-yard kickoff return and a 36-yard pick six, the same guy doing it, was pretty amazing. And honestly, Missouri State, you give them credit, with the game tie late in the fourth quarter, they went down clutch and got a field goal. And great name for kicker, Jose Pisano. I feel like I should play Feliz Navidad for that.
No, I won't.
But he's the one that got the field goals. And again, a completely punchless Missouri State offense. They got outgained 440 to 325 and win. So that's pretty impressive. So it's congratulations to Bobby Petrino on that.
Congratulations.
And then the UND, you know, it's not like they knocked anybody's socks off and beaten Western Illinois.
You have to go up in the polls.
Yeah, well, that's because of the UNI loss. And I understand that.
But UNI, how does the rankings have the top 10?
Yeah, we'll go through the top 25 here in a minute, but it is pretty crazy that UNI at 2-2. But if you look at it, UNI is now, they're in cruise mode, theoretically speaking, until they get to the NDSU game, because they don't play UND. They've already lost to South Dakota, or they've already lost to South Dakota State and lost to SIU. So the two toughest teams on their schedule outside of NDSU, now they've lost. But theoretically, they should still be alive.
Mm-hmm.
But they have zero margin for error now. Now, I'm not saying UNI is going to have perfect games in these, but if you look at, now Missouri State comes there next week. Would it shock me if Missouri State went in there and won? Yes.
Nope. No.
It would me. I don't think they can beat UNI, but who knows? But then UNI goes, they go to Western Illinois, and then UNI goes to South Dakota in one of those goofy Friday games right before they play the Bison. I wonder, if USD is going to get a signature win, I bet that's the game they're looking at. Because USD, for all practical purposes, is done too. They've lost two games, and losing to Missouri State, man, you're not making the playoffs. Even if you sweep out the rest of your schedule, you have a bad loss on your record right now. And they still got to play NDSU.
Missouri State is not a loss you want to have under any circumstances, but South Dakota and UNI, I'm not going to call either team out, but I think South Dakota's on their way out, and UNI, if they lose to NDSU, they're done. I mean, they're absolutely done.
Right.
So
let's take a look around what happened nationally, Grant, in some of these games, and then we'll look at the top 25 that came out today. Ugly win for Weber State, grilling up UC Davis, number 2 against number 23. The Weber survives 18-13, but they didn't exactly look impressive in the process in that one. They had to come from a 10-0 deficit, and I thought they really had a good chance of losing that game to Dan Hawkins and crew. But Weber comes back, gets a couple of late scores, and hangs on to win. But not a very impressive performance by the number two team in the country, and they did drop a spot in the polls this week because of that.
Yeah, Weber deserved to drop just because based on that game, and in fact, UNI is still ranked 10th. I think that's being a little generous, but because UNI, you can't lose like that to Southern Illinois. I get your rank. Your two losses to ranked opponents, but God. If that kick goes in, you're still probably ranked third or fourth. So, But I mean, the Bison and the Fighting Hawks are the beneficiaries of that. So.
A couple of other top teams that went down to defeat Rhode Island, Rhodey, best known for scaring the bejesus out of JMU a few years ago, goes into Villanova and wins in overtime over Nova at 40-37. That's a bad loss for Villanova, man. In a weak conference like the CAA is this year, I don't know if they have much opportunity now to, that's going to be a big loss for them. And so they were number six, and the number seven team in the country, why don't you just get this out of the way now, because I don't want to hear about it. I said on this show that Nichols, with their power running game, would wear down Sam Houston. I forgot to tell him to play defense.
Yeah.
Why don't you tell everybody what the final score was?
The final score when the first quarter when you yell out your offense 7-0 Nichols, ha ha ha, we can throw to go to the Bison game. What's the score? 30-7 in the second quarter.
And then we looked at the board.
Ended up being 71-17. 71-17.
I can't believe Nichols got run for 71 points. I really.
That's what happens when you play a D2 school in Northwestern State. I'm sorry, until you beat somebody, I don't believe in anybody in this conference, period. So,
I mean, that's an absurd score. Nichols should be so much better than that. And
I said they were overrated to begin with. So
I mean, how does Julian Gums only have 9 yards? Nine. He had 9 yards rushing. He's the best player in the conference. He had 9 yards. Yeah. And Dixon, the receiver, he had 83 yards and a touchdown. But man, who the hell cares when you're getting beat like that? I mean, really? I thought Nichols was really on their way to being something in that conference. My goodness.
I don't believe anybody in that conference. The South conference is who can play defense the best and, you know, only get up 39 points. Is their version of good? I'm good with that. But
right now, apparently, Sammy's the one that plays the defense best. My goodness. I take back all the things I said about Sam Houston's defense, at least for one week.
Yeah, your dad doing better.
Or your Julian Gums better. One of the two. My goodness. Anyway, Kennesaw State hangs on to beat Charleston Southern. No surprise there. It's the Big South. Not exactly a hotbed of power football there. Jacksonville beats UT Martin, the number 10 team in the country, with a 38-16 win. Albany falls after that big season opening win over New Hampshire. They drop to Maine. The Black Bears get them. And then Furman sneaks by Keith Brake University, 17-13. They beat ETSU. Eastern Washington wins. Southeastern Louisiana gets it done. Delaware, don't look now, but Michigan/Delaware, ranked number 19, pounding Stony Brook this weekend. It's a big win for Delaware, who looks like they might challenge for a CAA title. Samford gets by Wofford, so that's the second loss for the Terriers. Could impact their ability to win the SoCon. And then we had a few other games get canceled, which sets up some interesting battles next week, Grant. We have already talked about UND, NDSU, and SDSU, and SIU. That's your final four coming up. But a couple of other interesting games. We were going to have JMU Richmond, but that's now canceled because of the corona infestation of JMU apparently has begun. So that game is off. And kind of, if I'm a JMU fan, I'm going to get a little nervous here because you start running through a couple more COVID postponements, and you're going to run out of games.
Good. I mean, honestly, there's no favorite to begin with, and JMU's got quarterback problems and everything else. I mean, right now, JMU just looks nothing like they did the previous season. I mean, hell, Elon almost went up to Bridgeforth and won. So, I mean, I don't know what to make of JMU. They're nothing like the previous year. Just that their quarterback situation is worse than the Bison one is. It's just, at least the Bison have a good backup plan in case. I mean, they're throwing Gage Maloney into the game. I never even heard of the guy. But it's just like, but you got to stop throwing picks. You got to stop throwing picks, though. I mean, Cole Johnson threw, what, 5 picks against Elon? It's just, they got some issues to hammer out before they can think about going to the playoffs.
But yet, they still will be the number one team in the country. The polls can't.
Wait, question. Does the winner of the UND-NDSU game go up to number one?
No.
Why not?
Because if it's NDSU, they won't, because they have a loss. I also just...
What if
just,
it's UND? Then they'll probably not, they'll be number one.
I think UND has a shot at getting to number one if they win this game. Because there will JMU won't play this week. And the UND will have 5 wins and no losses. And 3 of the 5 wins will be against teams that are currently ranked... Their wins are against the number 4... Again, assuming they beat NDSU. Let's just... For these purposes. They will have beaten the number 4... The number 5... And the number 6 team in the country. Pretty tough to keep the keep UND off the top line compared to UND beating or JMU beating Morris and somebody else.
What if NDSU runs the table and JMU they get a couple more postponed games because of the Rona outbreak? What do you do with the Bison then? Are they sitting number 2?
Because
they have a loss, or are they number one because they have better wins than JMU?
So would a 5-0 JMU be outranked over a 9 or an 8-1 NDSU? My answer is it doesn't matter. I think here's the interesting about UND moving up to 2 and Weber at 3. The distance in the polls between those two in points, 1 point. UND got more first place votes. Izzo said today on his show that he voted UND number one. So JMU has 28 first place votes and UND 10. I don't think that's going to make a big difference in the whole scheme of things. I think the Bison just need to get on the 2 line. And they may not be able to get there. They may have to get on the 3 line instead. That might be the best they can do because you know Weber is... Although the way Weber's played, I can't just sit there and say they're going to beat everybody either. But a UND loss will definitely drop them behind the Bison. I think it'll move NDSU up to at least 3. And I don't know if it's... I think number 1 might be a bridge too far. Yeah. That's my look.
But, I mean, I just don't like the way the committee would rather have a 5-0 JMU over an 8-1 NDSU.
Well, again, this isn't the committee. This is Izzo and Craig Haley and all the media guys.
I get that. But an unbiased committee, would they vote an 8-1 NDSU or a 5-0 JMU for number one line? I'm just saying.
Well, I agreed.
When the Bison would have much better wins than JMU.
Bison will get a 2 in that scenario.
That's BS.
Probably, but it's the way it's going to work.
It's the way it works, yeah. But it's not a right way for it to work. You should take all their wins, not just because of one little loss.
So let's go through the top 25 quick here before we move on from football. So JMU 1, UND 2, Weber 3, the Bison 4, SIU at 5, South Dakota State 6. So you've got 5 and 6 meeting and 2 and 4 meeting next week. That'll clear some of that out. Sammy moves up to 7 with that win over Nichols. Jacksonville moves to 8. Kennesaw at 9. You've mentioned it a couple times. UND at 10 with 2 and 2. Chattanooga now moving
UNI
up to...
UNI at 10.
Yeah, that's what did I say?
You said UND.
Oh, I'm sorry. That's where I would like them to be. UNI number 10. Chattanooga at number 11. They get number 13 Furman this week. That's a big game in the SoCon. As I mentioned, Delaware now moves all the way up to 12. And they're going to go on the road and play in the dungeon against New Hampshire this weekend. It was got a week to prepare after that loss to Albany. Nova at 14 after that bad loss. EDub is 15. Southeastern Louisiana 16. Nichols drops all the way to 17 after that humiliation. Albany 18. VMI gets in the rankings for the first time at 19. Look out, they could be the surprise SoCon winner. They may steal a bid from a Valley school if they can run it out. I mentioned New Hampshire. Davis actually moves up 2 spots with the loss to Weber. They move up to 21. The Word at 22. Richmond moves into the rankings at 23, but they won't get to play JMU, of course. That'll get made up later, so maybe Richmond might have a shot. Jackson State and Dion in prime time move into the rankings at 24. Who cares? and Murray State eat Jacob B. Murray at number 25. So Chattanooga, Furman, Richmond, JMU, Southeast Louisiana, Incarnate Word, Delaware, New Hampshire. Well, obviously the JMU game won't happen now. So we've got some, maybe some separation games this weekend coming up, Grant, that should help determine where we are in the whole scheme of things.
Yeah.
So it should be interesting indeed to watch, and I'm looking forward to seeing we'll talk a lot about NDSU-UND coming up next week, or coming up later this week, as that will be the primo game in the FCS as number 2 UND comes to the Dome to play number 4 NDSU. First time the Bison have faced an opponent ranked higher than them at the Dome since UNI in 2011, I believe, if my look back is correct. So, will be interesting to see what happens there. Shall we talk about a little bracketology here, Grant? Let's do that. If I can, of course, you would think I would be able to find the theme song in a timely manner, but that usually takes some doing for me, even on a live broadcast. And here it is. There we go. So, the 68 team field has been revealed. And again, we're not going to go into a ton of detail on this tonight, just because of what we've had to talk about. But some interesting teams that have made it into this bracket. And I will tell you that, again, I don't know how much chance you've had to look at it, Grant, being you're in the vacation mode here. But I guess I look at this field, and I know you hate it, and I know you're not going to like what I'm going to say here. But, man, Gonzaga looks to be a pretty easy favorite in this tournament.
Are they a favorite? Yeah, but I remind you this. You probably heard during the broadcast. There hasn't been an undefeated team since Indiana in 1976.
Yep.
And even if Gonzaga wins this championship, there's a big asterisk next to it. But
why?
It's a weird year.
Why? Why is there an asterisk next to it? Explain that one to me.
Because it's a COVID year. COVID year.
I don't think that has anything to do with it. They're playing the same shit schedule they'd play in a COVID year.
True.
I mean,
But this isn't a run for the West Coast Conference anymore. You got to play a good team week after week after week.
Well,
in this tournament.
I don't necessarily totally agree with that either, because if you look at who they're going to be playing in some of these games, it ain't going to be tough. Okay. The only redeeming quality they may have is, you know, they're going to obviously beat whoever wins between Norfolk and App State. Who cares? They're going to beat Oklahoma or Missouri. If Virginia gets to them in the Sweet 16, that could at least be an interesting game. Because you know Virginia will ugly it up. Virginia will ugly that game up quite a bit. The problem with Virginia is we don't know if they're going to make it to the first game of the tournament. They've got Rona going through there, and they may not qualify even to play, which would be interesting. And then if they get to the final, they're going to either play the final of that region, they get either Iowa, who is a perpetual choker in the tournament, or probably Kansas, who the Bison almost beat. So I just don't see a lot of challenge in that whole region for them. Grant, do you see something different there?
I'm going to try to pull up my picks here while I'm at it, but the more I look at this bracket, I'm like, most likely Gonzaga's going to go to the Final Four. That's what I have it picked as, if I can pull up my picks here.
Yeah.
Technical difficulties.
No, that's okay. Let me know when you got that, because I'll look.
The spinning wheel of death here.
But, no, that's okay. It's okay.
But, okay, I think I have them here. Yeah, I do. I have Gonzaga going to the Final Four. So,
but, seems reasonable.
I am going against Kansas in the Elite Eight. I think they'll easily get by Virginia or Kansas or Iowa with teams they got to get by. And I am going to the championship game. That's all I know about Gonzaga.
Okay. Well, I haven't gone that deep into the bracket yet, but I guess if I was in my brief snapshot that I've looked at so far in just talking about it in general, and if the Sagarin ratings bear this out too, they are a 3-point favorite over anybody in the field at minimum right now. I don't know. It seems inevitable that their region is just going to be, I think the region itself is going to take care of some of their problems, because I think there's two upsets in that region that are easily gonna that could happen. I think UC Santa Barbara could beat Creighton.
That's a pick. Yep.
Creighton just absolutely got handed it to him in the Big East title game by Georgetown of all teams.
Yep.
And so I'm not exactly enamored with Creighton's ability to advance. And UC Santa Barbara, man, look out for them. They are going to be, I know we're going to say the phrase tough out a bunch of times during this tournament, but the Gauchos are nothing to sneeze at on the 12 line. And they have an unbelievable ability to score. And that's a perfect, you know, there's always one, what is it always, the 1-5-12 upset happens every year? Well, that's... Yep. Right now, that's my pick for that. The other one, as I look at this bracket, and not necessarily in that, I'll stick with that region for a minute, is I think, don't count out Ohio, the formerly coach Saul Phillips' team, who, you know, now that he's left, of course, they win the tournament after Saul leaves, which figures. And Virginia, though, won't get a chance to even practice until Thursday. That's a big deal. Ohio is very capable, I think, of winning that game. And you can't say Virginia in the tournament without thinking of that UMBC game a few years ago where they just didn't show up. And that could be a big problem for them. Just a couple of other games as I look at here that I wanted to bring up, Grant. And you feel free to give me a few here as we go through some of these just briefly. But how about that play-in game the first night, the first four, Michigan State, UCLA? Wow, that's like a Final Four game in the past. And I know I'm dating myself here, but man, that's tune-in worthy basketball on the first night.
I have Michigan State winning that game, and I have Michigan State going to the Sweet 16. I think Michigan State, they're just on a run right now, and I think if they can get out of that first four game, I think they'll beat BYU. I think they'll get by Texas, too. I think they'll lose to Alabama in the Sweet 16, but Michigan State's playing really well right now. And just real quick, if I have time.
Go ahead.
I think USC is going to make a big run in this tournament as well. I think I have them going to the Sweet 16 as well. So USC has some of the biggest. They have some size. I like teams with size a lot, and they are a team that's got a lot of it. And with USC. They got their tall guys out there. They can shoot the ball too. So, you know, the Rocket Crews are top of the key three. They're good at it, and they can hit it on a consistent basis. Their size really is going to make a big difference to them.
I make sense to me. I think they're not going to have trouble with Wichita State or Drake, but Kansas USC will be an interesting second round game. Kansas should be good enough to win that game, but they may not have their second leading scorer in the game because of COVID, and what their roster is going to look like should be interesting. And I think if Kansas is depleted, well, even if they're not, I think USC has a reasonable chance of winning that game. No question about it. And then USC could wind up in a Sweet 16 game against their conference rival Oregon, which would be an interesting matchup. Because I think Oregon's very capable of going and beating Iowa, given the circumstances.
I have going to the Elite Eight, but I think Iowa, mainly because of Garza, and they have some really good 3-point scorers. But
Garza's a good ball player, no question.
USC is going to be they're going to be a tough out too, because USC, the size they got. But my concern with USC is their guards. They have inconsistent guard play. They turn the ball over a lot. It's going to come down. If they can keep it with their, if they can keep their post play under control, they're going to be a really good team. They're going to be a hard team to beat.
That bracket that Michigan is in,
that's tough.
That's a tough, that 8-9 game, Bonaventure is a good team. LSU, though, has been pretty flashy. And Georgetown.
I got to say Bonaventure winning that game.
Georgetown's coming in that bracket now. I don't know if the Hoyas are poised to make a deep run in this tournament.
I think that'd be Colorado.
Though. I would tell you though that Colorado, the way they played the other night against Oregon State, and I watched some of that game, that Pac-12 title game with Oregon State and Colorado. Man, I was not impressed with Colorado. They looked flat, and they looked like a team that just wanted to get the hell out of there. And they let an Oregon State team, who frankly, they were picked 12th in the 12. Of the Pac-12, and they wind up winning the damn conference tournament. That's pretty impressive.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. I'm not sure what Colorado's last impression on me wasn't a real positive one. The other one, you mentioned Alabama. Don't sleep on Iona, because you know his coach of Iona is Rick Pitino. And Rick Pitino has now taken his fifth different team to the NCAA tournament. And
that's a record in itself.
You can't, I think Tubby Smith and Lon Kruger were the only other two to do it.
Really?
Both guys who have been around for forever.
Where did Lon take the tournament? Other than Oklahoma?
Well, he had a few. I know he had a Kansas State team that was pretty good. I don't remember who the other ones were, but on the other side of the bracket, it seems a little more clear cut. I was just looking at Baylor's bracket here, which is the South region, whatever that means. They'll get by Hartford, obviously, pretty easily, but that 8-9 game between North Carolina and Wisconsin, boy, that's going to be a war. Wisconsin, and of course, you know I love the Sagarin ratings.
Wisconsin
is 13th ranked in the Sagarin, and they are the 9 seed. North Carolina, an 8 seed, and they're the 20th ranked. This is probably the best 8-9 game of the group. And you have to give each of them a puncher's chance if they get into a game with Baylor. You got major conference teams in there.
Yeah, I mean, that's going to be a good one between two blue bloods of, you know, college basketball, and Wisconsin and UNC.
And then you go to Villanova-Winthrop, and Villanova's leading scorer is out. And they have played like shit the last 3-4 weeks. Winthrop is probably the best upset pickup, is probably getting the most love of any upset pick I've seen in the first, 24 hours since this bracket came out. Villanova's a 6-point favorite, but boy, and we'll go into some of the point spreads on our Thursday show. I really think Villanova has a shot to get bounced early. And the bottom of that bracket doesn't really have a lot of teams that have a national pedigree lately. You've got Arkansas, who's back on the national scene, Purdue, and then Ohio State, who happens to draw our good friends from Oral Roberts. And I thought Oral Roberts, man, that's a matchup. I just don't think they have any chance to win. I don't care how many points Asmus scores. They just got too many guys that can defend both him and O'Banner, don't you think? I mean, I think Ohio State, they're a 16.5-point favorite. I don't see them having any trouble with ORU.
I mean, the only things they lead in that I like for them is, I mean, they're one of the best free throw shooting teams in the country. We already know that. They're the nation's leading scorer. They're a better 3-point shooting team, but granted, you're playing 7th league opponents. But just the amount, but the more I just look at them per game, Ohio State, because, Oral Roberts isn't a great rebounding team. Ohio State leads their 2.9 advantage in the rebound margin between the two teams, and they lead in offensive rebounding because they're getting a lot of second chance opportunities. They have 10.5 second chance points a game. They know how to turn a second chance possession into points. And as O'Banner's a great player, but he's not the best rebounder. I know Ohio State's got some size they can deal with O'Banner.
Yeah, I don't think that the size factor to deal with O'Banner. I mean, there's an O'Banner on every team in the Big Ten that plays like him. There's not an Asmus on every team, but, he's going to have to go off for like 40 for them to have a chance to win that game.
I think
if they would have drawn in a 3-4, I'm not totally surprised they got on the 15 line. I can't fault the committee because, honestly, they have the second best resume of the 15 seeds. Iona's a 15 in Cleveland State. They're both weaker. Grand Canyon's actually better. And Morehead State on the 14 line is the worst, and they're only a spot ahead of Oral Roberts and the Sagarin. So I think the best they were going to do is be at the bottom of the 14s. So unfortunately for them now, they got the middle team of the twos. And I just don't think that's a good matchup. I think, honestly, if they had played a team like Houston, which has a great defense, it might have been worse. But, Ohio State could be one of these teams that takes them lightly and maybe keeps them in it for a half. But I just don't think they have the athletic ability, as they say, to overcome five Ohio State players.
If Wiseman made the tournament, I think I don't know if they would have won a game necessarily, but it would have been fun to see them play Kansas because they were going to be a 14 seed probably if they would have made the tournament.
Well, based on what Oral Roberts finished, though, and the Bison, just for purposes of comparison here, the Bison were about ranked with Iona. They would have been on the 15 line. The Bison would have. I really do.
Right, but unlike Oral Roberts, they played the 3-seed Kansas to an absolute dogfight at Allen Fieldhouse.
Would have been fun to see Bison Alabama, wouldn't it? Even if it's in basketball.
But I would like to see if Indy's made the tournament, do you put them against Kansas again? Maybe they would have a chance to beat Kansas.
It's interesting. Eastern Washington gets that game against Kansas. That'll be fun to watch. Bison, Iowa, we could have a repeat there. That would have been fun. But I think the team people are sleeping on a little bit is Houston in the bottom of the Midwest bracket, because they have the best defense in the country.
And I'm
you wouldn't associate Houston with defense normally based on the teams they've had in the past, but this team plays good defense. Now, interestingly enough, that bracket probably has some more upset potential. There's Syracuse is in there, and I never bet it. Jim Boeheim's a pretty tough out. Clemson and Rutgers, which would be a horrible football game, is actually a pretty good basketball game. And Rutgers is actually the only team on the board that I saw that is favored as a lower seed, but they are a one-point favorite. So that's going to be an interesting 7-10 game. The other one on there, and we all love them because of what they did a few years ago, is Loyola Chicago. And they are the 8 seed. And wouldn't that be interesting if Illinois, which should get by Drexel in the first round, if you have an Illinois-Loyola game, boy, that's the Chicago-Illinois pride game right there. And I wouldn't put it past Loyola to scrap and maybe pull off an upset there.
They could, but I think Illinois, they're just on a roll. I think that's just Illinois.
Well, they sure played well on Sunday. They looked really good and were able to hold off Ohio State there in the final.
Yeah, they did. I think Illinois... They're on such a run. They won the best conference in college basketball. They're just on a run, and that's just something that might carry into a national title game. My concern with Illinois is if they match with Oklahoma State and Cade Cunningham scares me. I don't know if I want to go against him. He's just such an elite scorer somebody that I'm like, I don't know how we're going to guard him. He's really good. He's really good everywhere.
I agree.
He's just such an elite scorer. They're gonna have to find somebody else to beat Oklahoma State, right? Because you got to bottle up Cade Cunningham to start with.
So your initial Final Four, and again, you have the right to change these before we do our official picks here later in the week. But my Final Four right now, if I had to look at it, I'd have Gonzaga going. You said you had Gonzaga in the Final Four as well.
I did
as well on that side. I think. From what I've seen, and again, Michigan might be down a guy. That's a tough region, but right now, I have to look and see. I'm not sure I'm ready to pick Alabama to come out of there, so I'd probably put Michigan in. I think Houston is a sleeper to get to the Final Four, and right now, that's kind of they're on my kind of watch list. I'm going to pick them out of that bracket. And then on the other side there, to go against them, right now, my early pick is still to pick Baylor, just because they've been so good all year. But I don't know. The way Ohio State's playing lately and the fact that they have a pretty open draw to the final, that might be a better pick. So I'm kind of teetering between Baylor and Ohio State, but I think that's kind of what I'm looking at. What's your Final Four look
my
like right
final
now?
Final Four, I got Gonzaga, Florida State, Baylor.
Florida. We didn't even talk about Florida State. They're the 4 seed out of the East. You think they can run that out through there, huh?
Yes, because I think Michigan's going back to their Michigan ways of teeter-tottering, like in all sports towards the end of the seasons, where they just can't get it together. Of course, they lost to Ohio State again, when that game actually matters. So we're just at a point with Michigan that you got to prove to yourself, you got to prove to everybody that you're still one of the better teams in this country, because if they can survive Florida State, I think they can get to the national title. If they can get to the Final Four. But FSU is this son. They're on a pretty good run right now too. And Florida State, they're my pick. I think that can get by Michigan and Alabama. Okay. I think even though they won the SEC, I'm not really buying Alabama to get to the Final Four. So I'm taking FSU there.
Okay, so you got Gonzaga, Florida State on that side, and on the other side, what do you have?
Baylor, Illinois.
Okay, so you're going chalk on those two sides. Okay.
I am.
Well, and again, won't hold you any of that until we make our official predictions here later in the week. But, I think it's a wide-open tournament. I mean, I know we say that a lot. But, man, I just think someone's going to have to find a way to beat Gonzaga. And now that some other teams will have a shot at it, I think that will be interesting. But I have a feeling that some of these mid-major teams, you know, the Winthrops, and are going to cause their usual mess. And some of these big power conference teams like Georgetown, who are seeded in the 12 and 11. And I keep coming back to, remember what VCU did a few years ago coming out of that play-in game, first four, and coming, I mean, could a Michigan State make a run like that? I don't know. I mean, I think the way their bracket sets up, it's absolutely possible.
I'm going to the Sweet 16, so I think absolutely they can get out of there.
Yeah, and Tom Izzo is a one heck of a coach as well. So, again, we will break down all our make our official bracket predictions coming up on the show on Thursday. So we'll have a chance to dig into a few more of these types of issues and some interesting stuff going on there. Want to mention briefly before we're done here, Marvelous Marvin Hagler, middleweight champion of the world, passed away at the age of 66. One of my favorite fighters to watch. Legally had his name changed to Marvelous Marvin Hagler, and you got to have a set of balls to be able to do that. So rest in peace, Marvin Hagler. Fought the best fight I've ever seen, a three-round demolition job on Tommy Hearns in 1985. Pretty impressive stuff, and I know you're not much into the fight game, Grant, but certainly was a treat to watch in the boxing ring for a number of years.
I'm much to boxing, but great fighter recipe.
You got to respect a guy who's named Marvelous legally,
right?
I mean, right? Can't beat that. So I like that, and he had a nice post by. Did a little acting. He did some Italian spaghetti, what they call spaghetti westerns, where he did some acting there. So it was, he had a good career after boxing. And rest in peace at the age of 66, Mr. Marvelous Marvin Hagler. I don't think I can get Marvelous Mark Hubbard anytime soon in there, but
no, I guess I don't think
you
so.
You think I should stay away from that one?
Yeah, I'd say so.
Okay, all right. Well, before I give myself any other names, we should probably call it this. So the On Location Legend Edition here, man, we made it through without a technical snafu. That's pretty good. So,
the Wi-Fi's not bad down here.
Well, that's all right. We did okay. So, hey, get in touch with the show. Our email is legendandloudmouth@gmail.com. That's legendandloudmouth@gmail.com. You can find us on Twitter @legendloudmouth. That's @legendloudmouth. And check out our website, legendandloudmouth.com. That's legendandloudmouth.com for links to our previous shows and why Coastal Carolina forever and always will eternally suck. Grant, how do we find you?
All we ask here is that you're at Legend One, follow me, TikTok, at Legend Twice, since you're going to Legend, Earnscroll, Moth, Unscroll, Pod, the Legend, Earnscroll, Moth, Unscroll, Pod. You miss even like the show, hate the show, it cares, please subscribe to the channel.
Very good. Well, we want to make sure you get back to vacation and enjoy yourself. So doing some research here, and we've got a lot to talk about on Thursday. We've got NDSU-UND, SDSU-SIU, an entire pack schedule in the FCS, our official Legend and Loudmouth Tournament predictions coming up. Should be exciting. Can't wait to go through the brackets with all of you and start out the NCAA Tournament. Going to be fun times ahead. Hey, thanks for joining us, everybody. Legend, enjoy the rest of your vacation, and we'll see you next time on the Legend and the Loudmouth.